Good afternoon. We will begin the House Ag Policy Committee. We're a little short of people. I think they're party animals celebrating with Arlen.
I think so.
So, because Arlen, you know, Mr. Our page is celebrating a big birthday tomorrow. So when he arrives, we'll be able to acknowledge that as well. Representative Hamilton kind of did the big surprise today, the big reveal here today for Arlen Rusted, our page. That was pretty fun. Thanks for doing that.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I think by the length of the ovation he got, he should run for governor.
That's absolutely true. He's well respected and well liked, and we're all pleased about that. We now have them performed. Okay, so we can't do it yet. Well, what we've done over the course of the month of February, we've had the opportunity to have some FFA students with us giving presentations, and today we'll have two more that will be giving presentations. And these were students that were participants in the boot camp for FFA, and they were students who are in competition to do prepared presentations, speeches. And we did not screen them necessarily for what the content was or what they were going to do, but since they're students that came from different parts of the state and had a passion for FFA and a passion for agriculture, I thought it was important for us to, you know, we talk the talk, but sometimes we don't walk the walk. And so I thought it would be important to kind of hear from them and have that opportunity. So, so we don't necessarily always hear from students, and this is an opportunity for us to do that. And we will have the students come down. I don't know which one wants to go first. We do have Mariah as the first one on the list, but either Mariah or Valerie, whichever one comes first. And in the meantime, I believe now we have a quorum. So, Representative Hamilton.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the minutes.
All right. Thank you. Representative Hamilton moves the minutes. Is there any discussion? Otherwise, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The motion is approved. The minutes are approved. So, okay. So now what we were going to do, we have an FFA member. I'm going to ask you just to present yourself by stating your name first, and then you can go ahead with your presentation.
All right, my name is Mariah Danninger from the Forest Lake FFA chapter. I'd just like to thank you all for giving us FFA members the opportunity to come and speak to you over the past few weeks, and we really appreciate that. So now I'm going to give my prepared public speech entitled Raise Your Voice for Choice. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. And on that farm, he had a grass-fed, all-natural, hormone- and antibiotic-free organic cow. E-I-E-I-O. Sound a little strange? Well, with the growing interest in organic and all-natural foods, this may be the way children are now taught the song. But in order to feed Minnesota, America, and the world, conventional farming is also a necessary way to farm. So which type is best? The simple answer is both. We need both organic and conventional farming to meet the needs and please the desires of our consumers. They deserve a choice. However, along with choice comes responsibility to be well-educated and informed consumers, to know what they are purchasing and why they are buying it. Let's take a closer look at both types of farming and how we can educate our consumers about them. Recently, the public has taken a much greater interest in knowing where their food comes from and how it is raised. The concepts of organic satisfy some of these desires. Because there are not pesticides or chemicals used in organic, it is much more labor-intensive work, and as a result, provides more jobs. A study done by Britain's Soil Association in the UK concluded that organic farming provides 32% more jobs per farm than does conventional farming. Organic production is a great way for consumers to know exactly where their product is coming from and to support local farmers. many people feel that organic will provide them with a healthier product, and that is why they choose to purchase them. Consumers of organic like that they are being environmentally friendly as well. Organic products are a solution to the desires and wants of some consumers. Conventional agriculture is necessary to achieve feeding the vast majority of the world. With the population growing to be a projected 9 billion by 2050, constant innovation and crop efficiency is necessary to provide for the growing demand. CNN reported that research has proven conventional farming has, on average, a 25% higher yield efficiency than does organic farming. We need conventional agriculture to keep our world prospering. According to Monsanto, in 1960, a U.S. farmer fed 26 people. Today, they can feed 155 people. This is a clear example of how efficiency and innovation change our world. The U.S. produces nearly half of the corn in the world, more than China, Brazil, Mexico, Argentina, India, and the European Union combined. We have excelled in mass production because we have been forced to do so, with the amount of available and farmable land decreasing and the population constantly on the rise. That is why excellent mass production is a necessary tool for our world to survive. Organic producers need conventional agriculture. Without it, organic would not be unique. Organic would be the only choice, and therefore would have nothing different to offer. The choice consumers have pushes both types of farming to be at the top of their game at all times. It is up to us, as agriculture advocates, to relay information about organic and conventional farming. In order to have knowledgeable consumers, we must maximize the buyer's interest and ability to make informed decisions. One way FFA members can help with this effort is to participate in Ag in the Classroom. This allows some students who may not even know what agriculture is to learn from those who experience it firsthand every day. Farmers can also help inform our communities by having farm tours or open houses. On my family's dairy farm and creamery, we have a Farm City Day every year where people can come and learn about cows, milk, and farming through milking demonstrations, creamery tours, an egg trivia scavenger hunt, and many more activities. Each year we see about 1,500 people out to this event, and we love to know that they are being properly educated on farm life. Being an agriculture advocate will help consumers make informed decisions and make their choice with factual information in mind. So either organic or conventional farming, the choice that consumers make should be a well-educated and informed one. You could be a resource for consumers to learn about organic and conventional farming so they are able to make a decision with the correct knowledge and facts. So whether Old MacDonald has a conventional cow or a grass-fed, all-natural, hormone- and antibiotic-free organic cow, neither one is wrong. Both of these choices, along with having agriculture advocates educating consumers, can work together to meet our local desires and supply our world with an abundance of products and resources that will provide for today's need and leave a lasting impact on our world. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any questions for Ms. Denninger? Representative Hamilton.
I think it's, thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's more of a comment. And I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you. You know, the presentation was wonderful. And you know, I'm a strong believer that when it comes to agriculture, don't tear down one segment of agriculture trying to promote another. And you did a wonderful job explaining all facets of agriculture. So thank you so much for your presentation.
Thank you.
Representative Nornes.
Madam Chair, you were talking about this event that's held on your farm every year.
is that something that you and your family basically organize and support, or is there a larger organization that kind of underwrites the cost of that?
Ms. Denninger.
Well, we actually have a creamery on our farm where we process and bottle our own milk, and we sell it in local areas as well as a store right on the farm. I believe it's the first Sunday in June. Each year we have a Farm City Day, like I said, with members from the community or wherever can come and learn about farming and all the things that we do on our farm. And it is a family business. So it's our family that does this.
Okay,
but we have many organizations that also come and support local products as well.
Thank you. Well, thank you again. That was just outstanding, and we're very pleased that we were able to come before our committee. So thank you for that. And I'm going to ask if there are no other questions for you. Well, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. just a question. Yeah, very good presentation. It really gave a balanced approach to the entire industry of agriculture. Your quotation or statistic about the number of countries that America produces more corn than all those other countries, is how current is that number? Because other countries are really increasing their production, and this past year ours dropped because of the drought. So is that for 1 year, or is it just a general trend you're talking about, that number?
Ms. Denninger.
Well, that was from a Monsanto fact. I do believe it was a couple years ago. It, as far as I know, it's from 1 year.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate that you traveled over to be able to be with us today, too. So thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're going to have the second FFA presentation today, which is Valerie Early. Really. And she traveled a little bit further, maybe. So welcome to the committee, and if you'd just introduce yourself for the record, and then you can go ahead.
Thank you. As she said, I'm Valerie Early. I'm from the Spring Valley Wyckoff FFA chapter, and I also like to just thank you guys for giving us the opportunity to present to you guys today. Agriculture education teaches students about agriculture, food, and natural resources. Through these subjects, agriculture educators teach students a wide variety of skills, including math, science, leadership, communications, and technology. Agriculture education offers a huge variety of skills and subjects. But why is agriculture education important in urban areas? Although agriculture programs are popular in rural areas, urban areas have few formal agriculture programs. Agriculture education is important and should be integrated into urban area schools because it helps inform people about products they consume, connects to everyday life, and offers a new approach to education. Agriculture education is important in rural, suburban, and urban areas because it gives citizens knowledge of where their food comes from, how it is produced, and affects everyday life. 72% of consumers know little to nothing about farming and ranching. Approximately 225 million people in the United States know close to nothing about where the products and food they consume every day comes from. A survey that was taken proves that this rate decreases as agriculture education is offered in schools. According to a study in Illinois, students were randomly chosen from rural, suburban, and urban areas and found that 53 students were educated about agriculture and 144 were not. Programs that teach people about agriculture were mainly these 53 people that were educated. Without these programs, especially in urban areas, people know little about where their food comes from or how it's produced. Without knowing where their food comes from, how it is produced, and the benefits of it, people are more likely to make unwise nutrition choices and believe false statements about agriculture. 22 million people work in agriculture-related careers, with over 200 different challenging career options, according to the Journal of Agriculture Education. Arguments have been made saying agriculture is not connected to everything, and especially not in urban areas. But with 22 million people employed and numerous career options, it is clear agriculture is connected to everything. Little to no agriculture education is offered or required in public schools, even though it has been proven that agriculture is connected to science, food, and the economy. Agriculture is connected to people in almost all careers, whether doctors, connected by medicine, politicians, financial managers, or teachers. Agriculture affects each individual and profession in some way. As technology in agriculture progresses, science in agriculture becomes a bigger topic, using more and more new methods to make agriculture production more efficient. The average United States citizen consumes about 5.5 pounds of food per day, according to the United States demographics. Agriculture connects to everyone's lives because everyone consumes products made through agriculture on a daily basis. Products produced by agriculturalists are sold and consumed by the majority of people, affecting the economy as well. Agriculture is connected to people, even if they live in very urban areas. But little education is offered to teach people about the many ways it is connected to all people. Agriculture education should be offered in all schools. 96% of public schools have no formal education programs for agriculture. Only 4% of schools in the United States have programs to teach students about agriculture. Without the basic knowledge of what they are consuming and how agriculture affects each individual, many people will have little to no knowledge about what they are consuming. One way agriculturalists are improving the rate of agriculture education is by starting at the lunch table at school. Farm-to-school programs offer not only a healthy farm-fresh products to schools, but also educational options for students to learn about their meals. As Governor Dayton said, farm-to-school programs support the sustainability of family farms, build relationships within communities, and help revitalize local economies. This statement clearly describes the impact of farm-to-school programs can have on communities, farms, and especially on the education for students. Many of the farm-to-school programs have also aided in starting education programs within schools. Agriculture is a different kind of education that positively brings together many different types of skills. Schools located in urban areas should search for a way to reach their students and teach agriculture because it affects each individual's life. Agriculture education programs offer a three-circle type of education, including leadership, the classroom, and hands-on experience. This is one characteristic that no other educational program can offer. Although agriculture education programs are offered especially in rural areas, there are also programs in large urban cities. For example, the Chicago School of Agriculture is one of 7 urban agriculture schools in the United States and offers everything a rural school would. Even this school, located on the south side of Chicago, offers these three components. Leadership development is offered through the National FFA organization and other organizations. Through these, students are able to develop leadership skills and an understanding of the impact agriculture has on our society and the economy. Laboratory and classroom instruction gives students the knowledge they need to succeed in their careers. Through supervised agriculture experience programs, agriculture education gives students a chance to learn through a hands-on experience, giving them the life skills they need to do well. This school provides the opportunity for students to explore hundreds of careers related to agriculture, something many education programs outside of agriculture may not do. There are only 7 schools like this one in the United States, and it is important to have more agriculture programs in urban areas. Although other educational programs offered in many schools meet some of the educational options, agriculture education offers a three-circle approach to education. Will Collins made a statement. He is a teacher at the Chicago School of Agricultural Science and describes why agriculture is important. It doesn't matter if you're in an urban or rural environment. Ag impacts pretty much everything we do on a daily basis. I love the fact that our school is literally introducing students to a new concept that will impact them for the rest of their lives. Without a formal agriculture education program in many urban school areas, people are unable to connect with something that has an impact on their everyday life. Agriculture education programs should be offered throughout the United States to students in all areas, whether urban, suburban, or rural areas, because it educates people about products they consume, connects students to a huge array of careers and everyday life, and offers a new kind of interactive teaching. Agriculture education in urban areas offers students knowledge about a subject that affects their everyday life. Thank you.
Thank you. Very good. Excellent. Another wonderful presentation, and I think Charlie Poster will agree that, you know, part of his presentation now he doesn't have to give because she talked about farm to school. There we go. But thank you. That was excellent. Appreciate it. Comments or questions?
Just a comment as well. That was wonderful. Absolutely, Valerie. Thank you. And I like the part how you're also talking about not only where your food comes from, but the opportunities in agriculture. And if we had these ag programs and stuff in the urban settings, then they'd understand that it's not just about production ag. You talked about biomedical research and everything else. There's so many opportunities in agriculture. So you did a wonderful job. And, Madam Chair, we should really get her in front of the Education Committee to do a presentation. So, thank you. Thank you, Valerie.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Falk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And once again, I appreciate your presentation. And I would maybe just offer a little bit of pushback about one thing. I mean, I do think that the idea that, you know, 72% of the population doesn't really know where their food comes from might be a bit of a stretch if you want to extrapolate it based on, I think, one study where you said, you know, 52 out of the kids knew where their food came from. And I don't know if it's exactly a clear correlation. And I think that's one of the challenges we face is that I don't want to put forward the idea that we think that, you know, people who don't come from rural areas are uninformed or unintelligent. And I just think that that's one of the ways that, you know, oftentimes we can create barriers. And one of the things I thought of, too, is maybe some of the classes, they may not be specifically named ag classes, but you talk about where your food comes from. My mom teaches fifth grade, and they don't teach an ag class specifically, but they teach health classes and what are the five food groups and where does the food come from. And this is just one little anecdote that I've always thought to be interesting, but remember the old food pyramid? I think they've moved past that, but there used to be a cob of corn in the vegetable section. And once again, I think most farmers would realize that corn is not a vegetable, it's a grain. So it should have been at the bottom of the pyramid where the other grains were. You know, often you had like the breads or pastas or grains. But I think that it's important to realize that the subject matter may still be getting through, and we shouldn't assume that other people, just because they maybe aren't as close to agriculture, lack the intelligence or lack the knowledge. Just, you know, I would urge a little bit of caution in deriving some of the data.
Yes, Representative Falk, I do appreciate that you came forward and that you were willing to come before the committee and that you gave the presentation today. I think we've all been a little bit better educated about where our food comes from, as well as the importance of agriculture, and I think it's great that we've had the FFA students come and talk to us, and hopefully none of us, either in rural area or in the metro area, would come away thinking that we were being told we were unintelligent or unable to understand where our food comes from. Maybe we just don't have all of the information. And the students have been able to provide some of that information. So thank you again for doing that. Representative Keel, I think, has a question or comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. Thank you very much for your presentation. Both of you girls did a wonderful job. And I just think it's really great that you promote agriculture and that you're educating the public. However we think about agriculture, we definitely need to get the word out about how important it is and how it's important to our daily lives. You know, every day we cannot live without food, can we? And so it's a really important thing, and all the other good things that happen with FFA. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. And Representative Anderson.
Thanks again. Just a quick question. As I recall, and maybe I've forgotten, but the folks who have given these speeches are all girls. Do boys also? Do they get into this? Okay.
Yes, Representative Anderson. Actually, our first presenter was a young man.
Okay.
But But yes, you're right. We have had a preponderance of young women who have come forward. So would you, Ms. Early, in your FFA chapter, is it about an even split, or are there more men than women, or young women than men? Or
I would say it's about an even split in our chapter, yeah. I know that actually in the National FFA organization, there is actually more men than women in the organization, but in my chapter, it's about half and half.
Very good. Yes, Representative Keel.
I just have to add to that. You know, when I was a kid, I have four brothers, so there was no thought of my farming ever. And I actually, my husband and I do plant and do all of the things now, but you know, it's really changed a lot. We see more women and even fathers thinking, well, maybe my daughter will run the farm instead of my son. It's not just a automatic thought anymore that the sons are going to run farms. So, and it takes a lot of brains, so and multitasking, we're good at it.
Very good. And, you know, women hold up at least half the sky, and we also, you know, support agriculture and do our part. So very good. Thank you again. Very much appreciate you coming up to the Capitol and giving your presentation. Thank you, both of you.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yes, absolutely. Now we're going to, just a couple of things. We're going to go on to the Department of Agriculture. They're going to give a presentation on the Agri-Fund. And I also, before I forget, I do have a bill here that I'm going to pass around if you're interested in signing on to. It's related to taxation and the exclusions for the amount of taxation for farm and small businesses. So if you want to, I think a few people have signed on, but just want to make sure that we pass it around in the time here if people want to sign on to that. And then we will have the presentation.
I'm not going to be able to sing anything. Nobody wants that.
She did it. They did a fine job.
Yeah, she has more curves than I do.
But Mr. Poster, if you will just introduce yourself and then you can go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Charlie Poster, Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Move a little closer here. Thank you very much for the opportunity to present. Really appreciate it. I'm going to do a really brief overview, kind of a 30,000-foot level view of AGRI, the Agricultural Growth Research and Innovation Fund. If I could direct your members to the color PowerPoint, you can follow along. It'll also be on the LCD screens. So a little bit of the history of AGRI. This is the budget tails of the ethanol producer payments. That program ended last year, last fiscal year, 2011, and the funding in the out years, 14-15, were placed into AGRI. A little history of the AGRI fund. It was a rural economic development tool and one of the most successful in Minnesota's history. I'll try to talk a little louder. One of the most productive in Minnesota's history. It helped really create an entirely new industry, the biofuels industry, and today that industry is a $5 billion one. It helped support 12,600 jobs, and our 21 ethanol plants across the state of Minnesota produce 1.1 billion gallons worth of ethanol. So from that history of rural economic development and success, we've taken that, the budget tails have been placed into AGRI, and in line with statute, we want to continue that story of economic success and value-added agriculture. This is the statute that that directs the investments made through AGRI. It directs the Commissioner of Agriculture to really try and further agricultural development through things like livestock investment grants, blender pumps, but other grants, loans, and forms of assistance to support rural economic infrastructure. So we at the Department of Agriculture have laid out a broad theme for these investments to continue. And so you see the four here, and I'll go through and talk specifically about each one. The first is farm to school, and actually we just heard from FFA about what a positive impact this can have on a number of fronts. But first and foremost, we view the opportunity of the recent legislation that's passed that was passed at the federal level, the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act, directing schools to use more fruits and vegetables in their lunches as an opportunity for us here in Minnesota to purchase those fruits and vegetables from their own communities. We also see the opportunity to purchase meats, dairy, and grains. Rather than using a food service where the money largely leaves the community, we think we could keep those property tax dollars that support your local schools and use them to support farmers right in their own community. So that's one positive outcome. The second one, as the FFAers were talking about, is it's really an opportunity to learn about where your food is coming from. Many schools have actually taken to put in a school garden, use that as part of the maybe science curriculum, and then use that food in the actual school. But we come to it from that economic perspective. We think it's a good opportunity financially, but it also will have positive health outcomes. So first, we really broke it into two areas. We tried to look at what are the barriers from schools trying to enter farm to school, and what are the barriers from the farmer's perspective. So first and foremost, when we talk about schools who want to do this, they have to see what's available in their own community. You know, unfortunately, Minnesota is a cold place right now, and it's hard to grow things in the fall and the winter. But we think we have the opportunity, maybe through things like season extension. So schools have to be able to purchase things that fit their budget. Even really supportive school districts, if you have a supportive superintendent, supportive school nutrition staff, and a school board, they might get behind this, even if it's a percent, 2%, 3%, 4% more than what they're currently purchasing. But if that number goes up to 20 or 30, even supportive administrators can't support that. It has to work within the budget. So one of the first ways we're going to support schools who want to get into this is perhaps with a study looking at what's available in your community. When is it available? You have farmers who can produce it in a form that you find acceptable and can cook. So that's one. So looking at what's available in your community and seeing if it fits. Second is then you have to maybe prepare that food. We talked to a lot of schools and they said largely we've gotten out of the business of actually cooking food from scratch. We heat food, we serve food that's already been prepared. And when we asked schools around the state what's your number one need in terms of infrastructure, they said simply knives. I mean, we don't have knives anymore. And the goes up from there to things like ovens, food processors, blenders, but there's a wide range of needs. So on the school side, both planning and feasibility, what's available, but also equipment purchases, allowing you to then take the food that you purchased from your local community and being able to prepare it. But we also need farms to be able to supply that food. So we've asked farm groups around the state to say, well, what is prohibiting you from getting involved in farm to school today? And there were a variety of answers, but some of the ones that we heard over and over again are things like food safety. If you're growing a commodity that you sell to an elevator or anyone but an end consumer, you might not be as familiar with consumer food safety rules. So things like GAP, Good Agricultural Practices of Food Safety certification that we might help provide them with. Also, the idea that you might have to aggregate with other farmers to be able to sell to your local school. So could we help design or support them in designing a co-op where you could come together and then sell to an end user, being a school? And also things like cooling, making sure that you're keeping your lettuce or your perishable fruits at a temperature that ensures food safety and the preservation of the product to get to your local schools. So we think this is a really good opportunity to keep those local community dollars that are going to be purchased foods in your local community. We come at it through a lens of good rural economic development, but there are also chances for positive health outcomes. And I'm really happy to say that Blue Cross Blue Shield shares this vision. They've stepped forth and put $125,000 into this, saying, we, Blue Cross Blue Shield, will help pay for the purchase of cooking equipment for schools. We'll help pick up some of their share. They think that this can help address childhood obesity issues and diabetes. So if we can show that we're making a positive impact in those areas, we think that they'll continue the partnership moving forward. The next one is the Livestock Investment Grant Program. This is a program that the Department of Ag has administered several times before, in 2008 and 2009. This is aimed at expanding Minnesota's livestock industry. It's a $7 billion industry today, and we want to keep investing it and keep expanding it. So this is a grant program that says if a producer wants to expand their program or expand their operating facility, the Department of Ag will put in $1 for every $9 that the producer puts up. So we feel like we're leveraging a lot of private money. It's a 10% grant program up to $50,000. And in this year's round of grants, we put an emphasis on beginning and transitioning farmers. The average age of a Minnesota farmer today is 59. And a lot of operations are considering who's going to take over after I leave. Again, an issue that the FFA folks brought up. Who's that next generation of farmers? And often it's a daughter today. And it might be bringing someone back to the dairy farm, a son or a daughter, and you can support your family on maybe a 40-head operation, but to bring in another member, you might have to move to a 100 or 150-head. You want to put in a parlor. So we want to support that. So, again, this is a grant program aimed at any livestock. It's available for all livestock producers, regardless of what you're raising, be it dairy, beef, poultry, swine. So if you want to expand your operation or get into it, the Department of Ag would like to assist you. And I'm really pleased that the focus on beginning and transitioning farms worked this year. The largest number of recipients that were granted were aged 26 to 35, that next generation of farmers. So this is a program that the department has done before. We've had really, really good response to this. In 2008 and 2009, we had 10 applications for every one that we could fund. This year, the number was 7 to 1. We had $1 million to grant out, and we received $6.7 million in requests for that fund. So almost 320 applications, I believe. So it was very, very well received. The next broad theme is the value-added business grants. This is really in the same spirit that the ethanol producer payment came to be. It's really, we want to continue to add value to the commodities that we grow and raise here in Minnesota. Selling commodities is a good start, and it served our economy very well. But it's when we start to further process and add value to those commodities that we really see our agricultural economy grow. And so this is aimed at, again, any business who wants to expand processing and marketing of Minnesota goods. And again, here we kind of split them roughly into two camps. First, if you're convinced that you have an excellent idea for a new business or you want to expand the business you currently run. You know, we've aimed this at ag entrepreneurs, ag businessmen and women. So if you're convinced that you have a great idea for a business but aren't quite to the startup portion yet, we would assist you with business planning, feasibility studies, market planning, and succession planning. The other group is for people who are maybe already in business or just getting ready to commercialize. So if you've been operating, but you want to continue to add value to your project, and maybe expand, we'd like to assist you with the purchase of new equipment or capital investments. And that portion is a 25% match of a grant. So for every $1 that the Department of Ag puts forward, the private producer puts forth $3. Again, we're leveraging $3 for every one that the Department of Ag puts in. And again, this has been very well received. The most recent round of grants closed on December 31st. And for the $400,000 available, we had $1.3 million worth of requests. And that was on a very short timeline. We did not have the ability to do as much promotion as we wanted. And I think that as we move forward, we'll receive even more requests for funding. Here, I think it might be good to give some examples of the type of businesses that we've received. Much like Mariah's family, who does on-farm processing, that's exactly the kind of entrepreneurial spirit we want to encourage. So some excellent examples have been dairies who want to put on-farm processing to make yogurts, artisanal cheeses. Another good example is orchards. You know, you can sell your large, beautiful number one apple at the grocery store direct to the consumer. But if you have offs or damaged fruit, you could potentially put a bakery on your orchard and do things like apple sauces, apple ciders, cakes, tarts, things like that, adding value to the commodities we grow. Meat processing, we feel, is also a great opportunity. if, as there's been a real trend in direct-to-consumer sales of meat, if those are going to continue, we need to make sure that we have the ability to process around the state. And as we've gone around the state, we've heard from livestock producers who say, you know, I like to sell directly to my consumers, and I used to have to travel 40 or 50 miles to get my animals processed, but increasingly it's farther and farther, 100 and 150. It makes it tough for me to market directly. So we think that there's an opportunity there to team with both livestock producers and the processors to see if we can help meet that increased interest in direct-to-consumer sales. This idea is modeled after a very successful value-added business grant that the United States USDA, Federal USDA Rural Development did. So if we can recreate that success and continue investing in our ag industry to add value to the commodities that we grow here, I think it'll be a good reinvestment and continue to have our ag economy move forward. The fourth one is renewable energy. And I think many of you saw this slide yesterday. And I talked a little bit about the original ethanol producer payment program and the industry that helped spawn. It's, as we talked about yesterday, for all the reasons, it's been incredibly successful. And through the NextGen board, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture has supported research in next generation biofuels. Work that's been done on places like Minnesota State University, Mankato. I got it right this time. We want to make sure that the growth in the next generation of biofuels, as you see here, moving from 2012, which is on the left side of the chart, to 2022, we're going to increase the use of our biofuels tremendously, 110 or 120% more than we use today. But those things are going to be largely in fuels other than corn-based ethanol. We want to continue to have that portion of our economy do well, but we also want to allow for the next generation of biofuels to be researched here and commercialized here. So through these research grants, we are trying to help further that industry as well. One example I like to use is recently Central Lakes College from Brainerd, Minnesota received a grant to do research on test plots of trying new feedstocks, seeing if they grow in our climate, if they work well in our soils, what's the yield like, what's the energy potential of those products. So research like that will allow us to take advantage of the opportunity of the increased usage of biofuels over the next 10 years. That is a very broad theme of the four areas of investment that the Department of Agriculture is looking to make using the Agri Fund. I'd be happy to stand for questions or comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Poster. Questions? Representative Johnson.
Yeah, thank you for that presentation, Madam Chair. Thank you for that presentation. This is an area that I just have an interest in. I think there's a lot of room to move here. I live in North Mankato, and Mankato has a long history of value added to agriculture, and it's just central to our economy, and I think adds to basically to the strength of our local economy. And what I'm glad to hear is I've just seen some innovation to taking a step forward beyond the traditional a little bit. I'm really pleased to see that you're talking about business expansion. I think a lot of times when I see equity, you know, capital being available, it's to start up businesses. But what I've learned recently is that businesses in our area get started but need to expand, and that's where the real challenge becomes. And there's a track record in that, so that's exciting. And a lot of this is in industry that would be related to what you're talking about. I'm going to shift, though, to ask you about you mentioned about available food in the winter, you know, and I'm curious, you know, it's kind of hip right now to eat locally. And I always go, well, I hope I don't have to eat locally in Minnesota because it'd be a pretty slim pickings. But I can also think that there's potential through greenhouses or others. Are there any efforts to promote local foods that would be more available in the non-traditional seasons or in the cold seasons?
Mr. Post,
Madam Chair, Representative, great question. And I've actually gone around the state to talk with our statewide partners about this opportunity, independent bankers, almost all of our farm organizations, regional development commissions. Not necessarily because they will be able to take advantage of the funding, but small businessmen and women will probably step into their office before they step into the Department of Agriculture's office. So if our partners know about this, I think that it stands a good opportunity to succeed. And on a recent trip to Willmar, I had a couple gentlemen come up and said they're from Milan, Minnesota, and they are trying to perfect, you know, season extension, both starting early and then growing late into the season. They're convinced they've built the perfect greenhouse, and they think that they can grow vegetables all year round. And that's the kind of exciting opportunity, I think, if we are able to help them, that's a real opportunity to be able to grow year round. So, you know, we've encouraged them to look at this to see if it works for their project. But we hear about opportunities like that as we travel the state. Another idea is to have a vegetable grower kind of team with an industrial partner that has a lot of waste heat. So if you could take advantage of that waste heat that goes out the stack today and use it to heat a greenhouse, that might also be a real opportunity. So there are people thinking about these things, and we think this is a good opportunity to help.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you. And I lived through the times of when I first started teaching, of the very nice home-cooked meals that the cooks actually cooked. In fact, one story I'll tell quickly is a group of mothers got together and forced the cooks at the school not to serve turkey the day before Thanksgiving because the school's turkey was better than the mom's. But anyway, that being said, the farm to the school is a great idea, but I know budget cuts and everything else in schools. The idea of standing there and cleaning and, you know, peeling vegetables and cutting it up into the portions that the kids would need, I know is very problematic. And again, the equipment is totally changed over from actual cooking to, you know, to just heating and serving. And so I find that very problematic. I'd like the concept, but do you have some comments?
Mr. Poster.
Madam Chair, Representative, that was a common hurdle from both school, when we would ask, what are some hurdles? Both schools and farmers said, you know, they see that as a hurdle. So farmers, I kind of joke, you might not be selling potatoes anymore, you might be selling hash browns. You might not be selling carrots, you might be selling carrot sticks. So it might be incumbent upon the producer of the fruit, vegetable, dairy, or protein to put it in a form that the end consumer can use right away.
Okay. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. By way of my question, I'm going to explain that when the SHIP program came out, my local school district decided that one of their summer school projects was going to be to raise a garden. And it's gone from a fairly small garden to a sizable, and they harvest the produce off of it and prepare it. And you know, when I'm listening to the school, I know we don't prepare everything in our school district, but I do know they do some things by hand still, and we have some equipment in the school district that they work on it. And while it's a problem to get all that processed, and they didn't process it. Whatever it was fresh, they cooked and they took care of it right away. But they did have some volunteers come in and help work, because obviously the cook staff couldn't do that along with the, I think they're there at 5 in the morning already trying to get stuff ready for the day. I'm wondering how many schools in our state actually do some prep. I want to believe there are some that do some of the prep. But anyway, do you have any idea?
Mr. Poster?
Madam Chair, Representative, I can't give you numbers on prep, but I do know, I believe there are roughly 400 to 450 school districts in the state. And in the most recent survey asking if your school does farm to school, roughly 130 say they do some form of farm to school today. The most common first step into this is apples. There's no preparation. That you can usually build it into their existing meal plan, and they might have an orchard in their local community. So almost every school, the first step they take in is apples, and then as they kind of get used to that, they move up the chain.
Thank you.
Representative Keel.
Yeah, apples don't work up in our area.
Beets?
Beets do, yeah, but that would be a major project to process those. Actually, funny thing, because the diets changed, the kids are not very happy because they used to make homemade chocolate chip cookies. And, in fact, my son would say if he didn't feel like eating the meal, he would go buy two chocolate chip cookies like that, and that would be his dinner. And he was 6'2". Mm-hmm. So after games, he was pretty spent. Not something I appreciated. But you know, I know the kids really appreciate the prepped food, and it is hard for our budget to make sure that we keep it going. But with the vegetable garden, they're able to do quite a bit in the fall. And apples would be great. We just don't have any orchards around our. I don't know if we. Well, there are apples in people's yards, so I know we can raise them up there. It's just not a common thing. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keel. You know, I was thinking about for all of us in our districts, we probably have been in the schools to actually tour our schools. But how many times do you go into the kitchen? I don't know. Maybe Representative Hamilton has done it. I don't know. I mean, you go and you tour the school, but that's not part of what they show you in the tour. So we probably don't really know what kind of equipment they have. And when you even said they don't have knives, you know that it's come a long way since we were we were younger. I was younger anyway. Representative Anderson, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment and a couple of questions. A couple of years ago, a nursery back in my hometown received, I think it was a federal grant, to grow tomatoes in the wintertime to pay for heating the greenhouse and such. And it lasted for a year, I think, but because of the increased cost of heating, I don't think it continued on. But they did try the tomatoes, and the tomatoes were great, but I think because of the cost factor, they didn't continue getting grants for that. Just a couple questions on the Livestock Investment Grant Program. Great program, more demand than available funds. So with these additional agri dollars, could the amount in the Livestock Investment Grant Program be expanded?
Mr. Poster.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes. In the most current fiscal year, we had $1 million available for the grant, and in our 14-15 plan, we doubled that amount to $2 million per year.
Representative Anderson.
That is good news. Talking about the value-added grants, you talked about business planning, feasibility, and such, market planning, and I see Dan from AURI here. How does that differ from what AURI does?
Mr. Poster.
Madam Chair, Representative, many of the businesses, the eligible entities are farmers or groups of farmers. So if a farmer were to receive a grant, it would be up to him or her where they do that market planning. And AURI is an excellent, excellent resource for this. So they could go to AURI, or maybe they're already working with a private business consultant. Or another example is some of the RDCs do that work. But we view AURI as a strong partner in making sure this is successful, not duplicating it. The Department of Ag will not do the business planning or the feasibility planning, rather assisting them in getting it done.
I'm Representative Anderson.
One more question. Thank you, Madam Chair. On the farm-to-school program, one of my thoughts is if a farmer provides lettuce or whatever, are there any liability issues that the farmer has to cover in terms of providing food for a school?
Mr. Poster.
Madam Chair, Representative, that is an issue that many farmers were concerned about when we started talking about this. And so one of the ways to address that is that GAP certification that I talked briefly about, the Good Agricultural Practices, showing that you are certified in food safety handling and then getting insured for that risk. It's different than selling corn to an elevator, honestly. You're targeting a different market, so you have different risks. So they will have to address that. And schools also say, we want to make sure that we're covered, you know, that we're covering all our bases.
All right. Representative Prisha. No. Any other questions? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, thank you for your testimony. And I had an individual in my office here a week or two ago, and they're talking about bioproducts, not just biofuels, but bioproducts, different products that they're researching, wanting to do. And my question is, when we first put in place the ethanol producer payments, do you remember what the total dollar amount was for that initial program?
Mr. Poster.
Madam Chair, Representative, I believe it was $30 million a year, so $60 million per biennium.
And Madam Chair.
Representative Hamilton.
And Madam Chair, that's what I thought. It was $30 or $35 million. And so you take a look at all the opportunities and the exciting things taking place in agriculture. I mean, collectively, that's one of the things that we should be looking at to be investing more dollars in stuff like this as well. And listening to the testimony from the FFA students and other students, you know, you take a look at how do we get more and more people interested and educated to come up through the educational pipeline and everything to seize those opportunities in agriculture, because I know there's a number of ag businesses that struggle with finding employees that are interested as well. And, you know, that's the gist of the bill that I introduced is propping up 4-H, FFA, MEAL-C, MARL and stuff. Again, getting people educated through the pipeline to come out and embrace these opportunities here. So my other questions were answered, I guess. Oh, the other question that I had is we had a minority program that we passed. The value-added grants, have we had anybody that applied to that would also qualify for the minority program? Have we been reaching out to minorities so that they know and understand of these programs that are available as well?
Mr. Poster.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, we've been active and we've tried to hit every farming community we can think of, including our urban farmers and our ones outstate. So we've been trying. You know, our joke is we'll go anywhere two farmers are having a cup of coffee to let them know about these opportunities. and our great division director, Mary Hanks, just told me one of the things that one of the people that applied and was funded for the most recent round of value-added business grant was TrueVang to, I believe, expand her existing business operation. I think she helps run a senior living center right now. And she's trying to bring in locally sourced foods to serve that market. So, yeah, we really tried to get the word out.
Very nice.
Thank you. All right. I see no other questions, but I wanted to just so you gave us the colorful presentation, but we also have the two-sided sheet, and that gives us a little bit more information about the amount that the commissioner is going to take care of in this coming biennium, and as well as kind of a little bit more about the expectations and the outcomes for that. So if people just wanted to alert you to that so you see that, thank you.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for the opportunity to as well. I think this was good. I don't know if anybody else wanted to comment about any of the programs that are included in the AGRI that the commissioners plan otherwise. Okay. Well, a couple of other things then. Thank you very much, Mr. Poster. A couple of other things. Just wanted to announce that we're going to have Representative Wiginius is going to give her a legislative district report today. So we have something more to do today. But also that today at 5 o'clock in the Ag Environment Finance Committee, we are hearing from the department. So if you're interested and not heading out right away, 5 o'clock this evening, and it might go into the evening, but we'll have some more of a presentation by them. But that doesn't mean that we're not going to have a presentation actually in our committee. We're going to do a couple of things here. One is next week we'll have the Ag Finance Bill. We'll start talking. We'll kind of do a walkthrough of the Ag Finance Bill here in Ag Policy so that we can get it to the Ag Finance Committee. But we'll start it here. We also had some discussion this morning about the Ag Water Quality Certification Program. We'll be talking more about that as well. The Agri Fund we've now touched on, so we should be fairly familiar with what the commissioner's plan is for that. We have a couple of other bills that are coming through, and some of them being some tax bills, so we may not necessarily have these bills, but just be aware that, you know, there are a lot of things, and if you do see, and I was going to offer this yesterday, the biofuels bill, Representative Keel has signed on, but there may be others who want to sign on to that, and, you know, just a reminder that you can do that either on the House floor, or you can just send the email to do that. I think that, again, the more we work on these projects together, the more focus there is, and people will understand that we have an interest, a strong interest in some of these things. So I think those were the announcements I wanted to make. All right. So I think we're ready for to hear about from Representative Wagenius, who, once again, if you look at the district maps, we she has what is a dot in the in the state map, but she has just as many people within that dot as Representative Dill has in his that huge part of his. So
you guys ready for something different?
Yeah.
I think so.
My legislative district, and you will see it in the map that's coming around. But it's an incomplete map because you see this big, just gray area in the middle here. That's the airport. So you will also get a map which puts the airport into the district, because you can't. There is no map that I could ever find that had the overlay. So this is inside right here. Okay? Make sense?
Oh, I see.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Make sense?
So where are the bars made? Where do the bars come from on that map?
I'm going to tell you about the bars at the end. But I made them. So we'll talk about those at the end. Here. When you look at my district, one of the things that you will see is that for the products that you produce in your district, lots of them move through my district. Whether it is the airport, or if you look at the bottom, that is 494, or up the side, 55 and 5, these are major thoroughfares, 35W and 62. 62 goes right through the middle of my district. These are all major thoroughfares, all used for trucking. Coming down on the side, though you can't see it very well, is Minnehaha. Well, you can't see it very well. But coming down into the airport on this map would be the light rail that goes to the airport, and that is the border of my district on one side, and that's the light rail that goes up into the city of New York, into the downtown. So, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the airport because it's so dominant in my district. It's the 12th busiest in the United States, but it's only on 3,400 acres. So you can see, when you put this map inside of this map, that we have a very constrained airport. We can talk more about it if you want to. There are 436,000 flights that go in and out of operation. So that's one arrival or departure every year. That's way down from 2001, which was over 500,000. The comparison I would have you look at of an increasing airport, and this was at the choice of Northwest Airlines when they were Northwest Airlines. They decided they wanted to expand more at Detroit, and the state said, well, that's fine. I disagreed with that, but you're sometimes on the losing side of things. So Detroit now, where we were even, Detroit has expanded, and they have 443,000 flights. But what is amazing to me is Detroit has multiple higher amounts of pounds that they put into commerce from their airport. Huge multiples. I mean, I can give you the numbers, but just if you want them, I'll give them to you. But one of the things that happens in Minnesota is that about two-thirds of the product that is destined to get into the air transport system is put on trucks sent to Chicago, gets into the airport transit system, not in Minneapolis, but at O'Hare. So just to give you a perspective. Okay, so that gives you
kind of the transportation, that we are a transportation hub, which now, I think it surprises me sometimes when I think about it. The rest of the district, where all the little lines are, it's all residential. I have very little commercial in my district. Obviously, the airport is commercial, but that is not integrated into the district. You don't go to the airport to go grocery shopping or to any other kind of shopping. My Minneapolis part is literally all residential, almost all middle class. I live in a three-bedroom, story-and-a-half house, and that is totally typical of my district in the Minneapolis part. It's a little different in my Richfield part, which is down here. Richfield is a newer community. The lots are a little bit bigger, and the houses are a little bit smaller. So when I door knock in Richfield, I think, oh my gosh, if I had a garden in Richfield. But, you know, they have wonderful opportunities. But one of the differences is that in my Minneapolis part, it's pretty much turned over to a new generation. I have three elementary schools in the Minneapolis part, and our big problem, expansion. One of my schools is expanding right now, and another one is on the cusp. They just really need it badly because we've just got young families. Not intuitive for you guys who are not urban dwellers, because a lot of, you know, just as there are myths about, well, sometimes there are myths about what urban areas are like. So, two more things I want to tell you about my middle class district. A lot of folks actually came from your districts, including my husband, who was born on a farm in Jay's district. That is a fairly typical, I mean, where do you think all the folks went? They went to districts like mine. So when we talk about folks not knowing about where their food comes from, think New York City, not Minneapolis. I want to tell you just a couple more things about the district. There's a farmer's market in Richfield that is kind of where this little blank spot is. Lots of my Minneapolis constituents go to the farmer's market in Richfield, even though there are actually lots of farmer's markets in Minneapolis. It is a big deal. And if you've never been to the downtown Minneapolis Farmers Market, has anybody been there?
Yes.
Okay. It is an outing. It is fun to go to. Okay. The other thing I want to point out about my district, these two lakes are a regional park. I believe we have the fifth highest participation in park activities of any park in the state. It is so busy. So we have, and I wrote it down, 381,000 visitors a year to this park system. And it would go from the pond hockey on Lake Nokomis in the wintertime in January to the triathlon in July. Lots of events like that all the time, including my very favorite, which is the Monarch Butterfly event, where families from all over come and go. You know, it's one of the kind of big events you might have in your district, except for one thing that would be different. They go home with a little ball of dirt, moist dirt, with milkweed seeds inside. So kids take them home to plant milkweed. It is a big deal. And all the science that goes along with following where the monarchs go from here to Mexico and back, and what they need on the way. So with that, I told you that there's a one farmer's market. I only have three grocery stores in my district. You would not expect that, but an And I don't go to one of them. I go to a co-op, the largest co-op in the state, which is a Wedge co-op. But it's only about 10 minutes from my house, 15 minutes if there's a lot of traffic. And that is fairly typical. The Wedge is full of people. It is full of local produce, and they do the best they can to get local produce. So, at the Wedge, for your brownies, I bought, the flour comes from Welcome, Minnesota. The eggs are from Larry Schultz's farm in Owatonna. And let's see what else. And the butter is from Organic Valley. So that is not an atypical way for folks in my area to shop. I'm going to tell you one more thing, and I'm sort of embarrassed to tell you this, but I'm going to do it anyway. Because I'm going to tell you what I grow in my yard, and I was fairly proud of it until somebody told me what they were doing, and I was embarrassed because somebody had 40 fruits and vegetables, fruits and nuts and stuff, berries in there. These are a typical urban lot. But in my typical urban lot, I have a pear tree in the front yard and two apricots, one in the backyard, one in the front yard. I have two cherry trees. It uses really well. My other cherry tree is young. I have two plums, lots of rhubarb. I have a good raspberry patch, some blackberries, and a good currant, nice currant. Except the rabbits I see are in the current right now, and that's not good. But I can see the girdling. Everything else I've wrapped up. I'm trying to grow lingonberries. They just don't do well where I have them, and I think I'm going to for next summer. So that's my backyard, and an embarrassment is that there are a lot of people that do a lot better than I do. Thank you, guys.
Are there questions? Yes, Representative Johnson.
I noticed your comment about the airport and the cargo being trucked to Chicago without any preparation. I just want to offer the Mankato Airport as an opportunity. I'm serious about this. It's 70 miles away from that airport. There had been talk about 15 years ago of FedEx using that airport for cargo because of that same challenge. And I would hope that, I don't know how this gets done, but I just want to share with you that there are opportunities in Minnesota to expand existing facilities for air cargo that I think are going untapped. So I thought I'd toss that at you.
Well, you know, that's for the state to do, I mean, for businesses to do, but I think it's the containerized issue that is hard. You don't transfer from one airplane to another airplane. It's easier for a truck to put in an airplane, and that's why it happens, I think. There have been lots of controversies around the fact that we don't have much there.
Mm. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm curious. There was they've talked about starting a food co-op in my area. Can you explain a little bit? Can anybody just walk into the food co-op, or do you have to have buy-in to it?
Representative Wagenius.
In ours, you do have a membership, and I can't remember what I paid because it's so long ago, but I think it was like $70 to be a member. But anybody can shop there. There are member specials. Not so many, but I do get a refund check every year for based on what I actually bought. And I one thing that's interesting about this particular co-op, and my son belongs to another one, and it's the same way. On my receipt, they will tell me how much of what I bought was local. So it's not only, and that's just good to know. They really do emphasize it.
Okay.
So it's if you are interested in that, there is a co-op association in the metro that is helping others expand. So.
Yes, Representative Teal.
Thank you. I'll have to ask them. I think they're already working with it, but I'm not exactly sure. I just know I've gone to one house in my community. You know, you think of egg product always out in the farm, but there is a house in the end of one block where they've got chickens, and if you would like eggs, fresh eggs, you just stop by. And you should bring a carton, though, once in a while she runs out.
Representative Fritz, did you have a question? Representative Fritz.
You know what? I just wanted to mention, and I'll pass this along. My husband and I were in the coffee shop last summer, and a gentleman had the monarch cocoons that he was giving away. So we brought two home, and you can pass this along. And we had our grandkids come out. We put them on a little stick, and then I do have a video, too, where they hatched and flew, and it was wonderful to watch all of that. And the milk seeds are where they have to have that breed, and then it was a really good experience for me and my grandkids, but there they are.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Kreisha?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just on the co-op, thank you for the bars, by the way. Those are wonderful. But on the co-op, I wanted to mention, we have a couple of big ones in our area, and I want to put a plug in, because one of the neat things with that is not only are they very popular and lots of people get produce from there, but the involvement of kids and the families that go out there on the weekends and during the week to help them. It's just absolutely phenomenal to see how many people are involved with these huge co-ops. One in particular near Randall for us has grown so much, they've actually had to move from their 25-acre plot, and they've tripled the size of it, and they keep growing. Wow. It's just phenomenal. But the participation is absolutely fantastic.
Very good. Representative Anderson.
Thanks. Out of curiosity, Representative, is there much locally grown food available at this time of the year?
Representative Wagenius.
For example, there's butternut squash that obviously was grown earlier and is still local. So there are a lot of things that would have been in storage that are still local, yes. So I am noticing squash, onions, potatoes from Wisconsin. So, yes. I mean, obviously not the greens and things like that you would see at other times of the year. But this co-op actually it's not that big, but it's a grocery store that also owns a farm.
Representative Thank you. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the bars. They're wonderful. And thank you for educating us in your district as well. And my comment would be, I wish we would do this in other committees. I mean, thank you, Madam Chair, for setting this up, because it's so interesting to hear about everybody's district, and it's helpful. Mm-hmm. And I think if we did this more often, maybe there wouldn't be so much hostility. I'm tongue in cheek a little bit, but thank you. I appreciate that.
Yes, thank you. Yes, Representative Volk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is more of a house cleaning issue. Were the minutes approved yet? Or
yes.
I just was seeing, I don't know if maybe there was supposed to be a backside to this, but they don't have at least this one, it doesn't say a time the meeting adjourned, and I'm not just looking to see if there were a few things missing, so I don't know if we should correct the minutes to actually reflect that there was more that took place than what we approved.
I am laughing because poor Ethan, I think I've taken him through three or four versions of this, and so he probably made multiple copies, and this may be last copy we... So, we will make sure that the full minutes will be in the next packet, and we'll have that presentation. Yes, thank you. I appreciate that for that. You know, I did have a question, and Representative Keel kind of brought it up with the chickens in Crookston. Are there chickens in Minneapolis? Are there any kinds of things, that people have within their backyards?
Representative Kahn grows chickens in her backyard and has done so for a long, long, long time. So she and her neighbors, it's in her backyard. I think that Representative Dabney has bees. And I don't know that you all know that Representative Clark has a CSA and an orchard.
That is not in Minneapolis, though. But the bees and the chickens are. And having chickens, Minneapolis clearly allows it. It's not. People do.
Thank you. And just as a follow-up, the ordinances in your district, not that you would necessarily know the city ordinances, but do they allow, like, how many chickens? And
I don't know. Maybe we should take a tour. I would invite you to come to the Wedge because I think that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
We can also tour Representative Kahn's backyard, but I've been there. So it's a garage with a fairly large lean-to on it and a place for the chickens, and there are enough eggs to feed her family and neighbors because there are a group of them that have it.
Very interesting.
But there, I don't know what the ordinance is, but I've not found that that's a stumbling block.
There is an ordinance, I think. You can't have a rooster.
Oh, you can't have a rooster?
Oh. Interesting. Well, I would suspect if Representative Wagenius had previously told me about the Wedge Co-op and suggested that maybe we should take a trip there someday. So we might want to do that and just be able to see that. And I think if you offer your brownies anywhere, you'd probably get a collection of people who would come. Thank you very much for the presentation and for the brownies. Those were excellent.
Yes.
Any other comments or questions? Otherwise, we will meet next week, next Wednesday, and we'll be talking about ag finance, but we will meeting adjourned today. Thank you.